say my name.
Just a game. It's the religion. Costa Papoulias and Stephen Hindle take a look at the week that was and what's coming for your Montreal Canadiens. Welcome to Breaking Habs Radio on the Hockey This Week Radio Network.
Damn right.
There's a fire starting in my heart. Reaching a fever pitch, it's bringing me out the dark. Finally, I can see you crystal clear. Go ahead and sell me out, and I'll lay your shit bare. See how I live you with every piece of you. Don't underestimate the things that I will do. There's a fire starting in my heart. Reaching a fever pitch and it's bringing me out the dark. The scars of your love remind me of us. They keep me thinking that we almost had it all. The scars of your love, it leaves me breathless. I can't help feeling them.
Will the Montreal Canadiens be able to get to that fever pitch that's required to beat the Tampa Bay Lightning after dropping two games early in this second round series? Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Breaking Habs Radio. Of course, I am Costa Papoulias, otherwise known affectionately as Coach K, joined as always by my friend in crime, Mr. Stephen Hindle. Steve, how you doing, man?
Evening, people. Evening, Coach. Happy to be on board, as usual.
Yeah, it was an interesting couple of days for the Montreal Canadiens, Friday and Sunday.
You know, they've had better Fridays and Sundays, I know that.
We've had better Fridays and Sundays as well. I mean, it's not, that goes without saying. You know, it all started on Friday night, game one. Again, Montreal does not get a Saturday night game, which of course goes against all kinds of traditions here in the province of Quebec. But nonetheless, a solid performance by the Montreal Canadiens, dominated from beginning to end. An unlucky break in overtime, and suddenly they find themselves behind the eight ball down a game.
Unlucky in overtime, and at the same time, it was the only clean goal of the game. It was a tough break for a team that needed their own bit of good luck to come around in game one. But the Montreal Canadiens, you know, they had to regroup and put something together for game two, using the emotions that built up from five periods of play in the opener. Through a first period, it seemed like it was okay, but game two was not game one, and it makes us all scratch our heads and wonder what let the genie out of the bottle in terms of Tampa being able to have their wishes granted offensively.
Wasn't that easy enough after Brandon Prust took the double minor? I mean, we're going to be talking about that with Carey Fraser, who's joining us during the second segment of the show today to discuss that situation with Brad Watson and some other things as far as officiating is concerned and some of the rules and regulations around the National Hockey League for clarification purposes for our fans out there. But, you know, you had that double minor to Brandon Prust, and then right away subsequently you had the cross-checking penalty going to P.K. Subban. That's when, you know, Tampa Bay scored their first goal of the game, and it seems the floodgates opened from there. Their confidence starting to show as they got off the schneid with a power play that was running about as badly as the Montreal Canadiens.
Well, look, power play going into Game 2 was a sore spot for both clubs, who, if you combine their averages, were still below 6% as two teams on the power play. So no one was doing well on the power play, whether you were the Canadiens or the Tampa Bay Lightning, and honestly, there was a great sentiment that both clubs should rescind any man advantages they got. But the thing about it was, and we discussed it on our pregame shows on Montreal Hockey Talk, the fact was someone was going to take advantage of the power play, and with the way that game one went, it seemed like it would be a deciding factor. Was it the straw that broke the camel's back in terms of the Canadiens' confidence against the Lightning? Who knows? But seven losses in a row, eight losses in a row, nine. Where does it stop, and where do the Canadiens find their bit of strength and consistency against a team that got beaten by all kinds of opponents that the Habs had no problem taking on?
Okay, well, let's break down these two games with a fine-tooth comb, starting with Game 1 and the performances of some of the bigger players on the Montreal Canadiens roster. Again, Max Pacioretty getting a lucky goal off the glove of Ben Bishop. That goes in, a flub by the goaltender. You know, they tied up the game, whatever the case is, fine. But not his best performance. You look at Alex Galchenyuk, Thomas Pekanec. The list goes on and on of players that are no-shows in this series and so far in the playoffs. Granted, Pacioretty's coming off an injury early in the second round. But, you know, it's the question is, what do they do as far as moving forward?
Well, look, I think your pause was probably apropos in that they need to take a moment before they make any rash decisions and get their heads screwed on tight. Michel Therrien with a press conference earlier at 5 p.m. stating absolutely nothing. The reality was that they weren't going to say much about the incident that has caused so much turmoil in the NHL over the last couple of days concerning Brad Watson and Brandon Prust, of course, but it really does seem to be the fog that is now masking the true problem for the Montreal Canadiens. There's a curtain of misdirection up now, which is benefiting the Tampa Bay Lightning because of what is going on. And I think for the Montreal Canadiens to find their center once again, they have to get away from letting the emotions get the better of them. And the timing of it couldn't be worse, in the sense that they just cannot control themselves after they've already lost it. The Prust penalties, the Subban, you know, Galchenyuk's three penalties in Game 1 that saw him skate nearly a team low in that game. Things aren't going right for the Montreal Canadiens, and things aren't going right for guys in the lineup. So when everything starts breaking down, they have to abandon the sense of self, go back to being the team that they were and how they made things work, and jump on board to, you know, just rediscover how they were able to be such a great team during the regular season. A lot of talk. That's what it all is, because what it boils down to is very simple words. Get it together. These Canadians have done it many times during the regular season, and more importantly, they need to face the reality at hand and the challenges now confronting them. Tampa Bay, the best team in the NHL at home this season. The Montreal Canadiens, you know, they went up against the Tampa Bay team that was supposed to be the worst playoff team, road playoff team in these playoffs. Tampa now has a 3-1 record in the playoffs.
On the road.
On the road. So you got to put aside what everything says to you and just play the game on the ice. And unfortunately, you can't let the emotions get the better of you, because that's where the fine line was, I guess you could say, snapped in two.
But isn't this part and parcel of what we talked about as far as teams that are playing at home? A lot of times we blame the Montreal Canadiens for playing a more fancy game because of the fact they're at home. But emotions run high at home as well. Can that factor into what happened in Game 2? Because they just came unglued at a certain point and kept on taking penalties they shouldn't have even had anything to do with.
Well, I think we can all agree, and fans alike would certainly chime in and say that they saw it too. There was a bit of fray at the end of Game 1. You put it very well in the sense that, Coach, this was a team that was deserving a better result, didn't get it, and we haven't even really discussed the offside call. Something we will bring up with Carey Fraser in the second period of play here on Breaking Habs. I'm going to ask him a couple of things in terms of would a coach's challenge have changed the outcome of Game 1. And, you know, hindsight is 20/20, but if it's a mechanism that can be put into the game that might allow for a game to have the result it should have, well, that would be useful. But past is the past, and that isn't going to be changed for these playoffs. So that's why the Canadiens, they seem frayed after the Game 1 loss. It only lasted for a period until the bubble burst, and quite frankly, the Phil Pula goal at the end of the first period in Game 2 seemed to just diffuse all of the effort that went into dominating the Lightning in that opening frame. And I couldn't understand what happened to the team the rest of the way through.
Yeah, it's difficult to say, but in looking at the second game, right, and we talked about this off-air before starting the show, we discussed a little bit the situation and what Michel Therrien may have been able to do to quell the emotions a little bit. And I mentioned in it to start that once Brendan Press had taken his double minor and then the subsequent penalty to Subban and the goal by Tampa, I would have called a timeout. And here's my thinking behind this. There are different ways to be able to delay the game in order to give your players a rest. One of them, after an icing call, win the faceoff, dump it down the ice, take another icing call, it burns another 20 seconds. Why can't Michel Therrien be a little bit more proactive in that sense? Because he's been sitting on his hands a little too much for my liking.
Well, I tell you what, one of our good buddies and a great listener of ours here on Breaking Habs, Tony Healy, who's chiming in. Feel free to do the same if you want. You can use the hashtag BRHA and join in on Twitter. You can even head over to BreakingHabsRadio.net. And Coach was ever so crafty in the midnight hours, putting up a tweet chat and a live listen feed for you so you can stay in tune with the show and talk to us on Twitter while we are getting things done. Well, back to what Tony was saying, and he was pointing out that emotions truly did get the better of the Montreal Canadiens in Game 2. And like I was saying, the Phil Poula goal at the end of the first period, John Cooper put it very well in that that seemed to be their free pass. They got such a lift going into the dressing room after a period where they knew they were defeated. They weren't the better team, and they didn't deserve the result they had, but they capitalized on the fact that they could come out with it. It almost seems like the Canadiens can't do themselves any favors offensively. The one-goal lead, the goal, the first period goal, which has been so elusive for the Montreal Canadiens in the playoffs, should have been their meal ticket. How they ate it is beyond me.
And that's a great point. You look at Ben Bishop in Game 2. After that first goal was scored, and he was shaky. He was worried. He didn't want to give up that first goal to Montreal because he knew that if he did that, then Montreal would start to push, and they did do just that. But again, Montreal beating themselves, taking those penalties. And for me, who's been behind the bench for so long, it's an obvious thing to me that my players are losing their emotions. And whether if I can't quell them on the bench, that at a certain point in time, I have to stop the game as it is, using my timeout, and get them to calm down.
Reset.
Exactly. And it's something that Michel Therrien all season has not done. He refuses to use his timeout in key situations in order to get his team back on the rails. And, you know, they get away from the game plan, they get away with their emotions, whatever the case may be. He seems to always save it for that icing call. And that annoys me to no end.
It's hard to argue with that. A lot of people have a different method and a different formula, but Michel Therrien is rather unique to himself in how he decides to use those timeouts. And look, in a game that was quickly getting away from the Montreal Canadiens, your question is spot on in why didn't the coach use it. During the second period, when the Lightning absolutely erupted, you know, the same could be said in terms of why he didn't use it when the Canadiens were dismantling themselves with repeated penalties
yeah.
and bad play. Whether they were being scored on is one issue. What led to their demise in Game 2. But it was the process that was happening at that time that was leading to them having their emotions just disappear. Or I shouldn't say disappear, but their control over their emotions was evaporating because no one was resetting them exactly as you said, Coach.
You're listening, of course, to Breaking Habs Radio on the Hockey This Week Radio Network. I'm Coach K. Acosta-Papoulias along with Stephen Hindle. Steve, what do they do moving forward? Just very quickly, we're going to touch on it a little bit more in the third segment, but as far as, let's not talk about the players and what they can do. Let's talk a little bit about what Michel Therrien can do. Because John Cooper seems to be sitting back and, you know, just putting his hands across his chest and not really needing to overcoach.
Well,
he's enjoying the moment.
Yeah, but let's not forget that John Cooper didn't have home ice advantage. He didn't have first change. None of these elements that a coach gains with home ice advantage. So Therrien is going to lose those, and ultimately he's going to have to turn around and give his players a lot more leeway in terms of their destiny will be in their hands on the road. Therrien can only do so much, and if all he has is a timeout to wield to get them back on tracks, my worry is that he's going to be anxious to use it. We're going to see it early into Game 3 if things get out of control, and that'll be it for the Montreal Canadiens. Dialing them back, it's like it's like fishing. It's like fishing for big catch. You can't just pull and yank that thing back. You're not going to save your season if you're just going to try to emotionally snap it back into place and get back on the boat, as it were.
But I think Montreal needs to play with a little bit different type of emotion. Not so much the emotion that gets you these crazy penalties that they were taking. I would like to see them play with a little bit more emotion as far as creativity is concerned. And what I mean by that is no more dump and chase, no more perimeter. Get into the mid-ice lane and start attacking, because it's something that they did in game one that brought them a lot of fruit. And then in game two, they got away from that because of the fact that they had all those penalties and they had to kill off so many penalties. I mean, there has to be a certain point in time where a team, and especially its players, have to realize that, you know, we may be playing a system here, right? And Michel Therrien, known obviously for his defensive systems, under his tutelage, the Montreal Canadiens power play has gone from about 15% to next to nothing. And so we know that a lot of that has to do with the quelling of creativity because of the systems that are being put into place. But there's a certain point in time where a player's pride kicks in, isn't there?
Well, there has to be a certain point in time where hockey instinct kicks in as well, doesn't it? These guys can't just go on a power play and not take opportunities to score, which we've seen them do exactly that. And it bothers fans, it bothers commentators and analysts and purists at heart, because this system has done so well by the Montreal Canadiens that at this point in the year, you would think that there would be an extra availability of shoulder on the road, so to speak, for these guys to kind of go a little outside the lines to make sure that they find the success they've consistently found themselves building throughout the season and teaching themselves how to achieve. Right now, this is a lesson in the opposite for the Montreal Canadiens. They need to remember what they learned in class all season long.
Yeah, that goes without saying. Montreal definitely has to, but I mean, they may have to deal with what they learned in class so far, Steve, but I mean, there's only so much that a coach can do. And like I said, pride has to kick in.
Yeah, but listen, learning from what you learned in the regular season does not mean doing the same as what you did in the regular season.
Well,
it means building off of the ability to know how to win. And right now, for a team that won 50 games in the regular season, was able to handle the Ottawa Senators cleanly through the first three. Well, since game four of round one, this has been that team that shut themselves down. They've done it a few times during the regular season, where they would go, a perfect point, both six-game winning streaks, I believe, by the Montreal Canadiens concluded and were followed up by losing streaks and big losses, where the Canadiens simply couldn't get over that hump. Now, they don't have to win six in a row. This is a situation for them where they just have to come back
and
get one at a time. Well, of course it would be nice, because that means we'd at least be seeing round three in Montreal, and as the sun sets later each and every day, it just makes watching playoff hockey all the more easier.
We'll revisit what the Montreal Canadiens can do moving forward, going into games three and four on Wednesday and Thursday night a little bit later on in the show. But we're going to go to break, and as we go to break, we remind you that on the other side, former NHL referee and the man with, I think, the greatest hair in hockey, Mr. Carey Fraser, will be joining us to talk a little bit about officiating, and we'll be in there too with a whole lot more. You're listening to Breaking Habs Radio on the Hockey This Week Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Back with more Breaking Habs Radio.
Peacegate Hockey is an educational program for youth hockey players living with type 1 diabetes. But make no mistake, this is no ordinary hockey camp. Peacegate provides on- and off-ice educational sessions designed to improve puck and life skills in a positively charged environment, while showcasing how it's possible to successfully manage your diabetes while still having fun. Designed to create new friendships, strengthen bonds, and improve quality of life, Diamedia Solutions, Inc. and Peacegate Hockey are excited to invite you to have fun while playing the sport you love. For more information or to register, visit peacegatehockey.com.
Real men of genius.
Real men of genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. In the Car Nose Picker.
Mr. In the Car Nose Picker.
For you, the daily commute isn't simply a drive to the office. It's a hands-on exploration deep into your schnoz.
I'm going in now.
With pinpoint accuracy and sheer determination, you dig for boogers like miners dig for gold.
Hit the jackpot!
And why do you do it? Because the windows are up and you think we can't see you. We can.
How you doing?
We'd like to shake your hand, but you'll have to wash it first.
Mr.
His personality is so magnetic, he is unable to carry credit cards. Even his enemies list him as their emergency contact number. He never says something tastes like chicken, not even chicken. He is the most interesting man in the world.
I don't always drink beer. Stay thirsty, my friends.
Now, back to Breaking Heads Radio.
Back to Breaking Habs Radio on the Hockey This Week Radio Network. I, of course, am Gossip Apulius, along with Stephen Hindle. And right now, it is our absolute pleasure to welcome former NHL referee, Mr. Carey Fraser, to the show. Carey, how are you?
I'm doing great, Gossip. Thank you.
Now, we're going to get right into this because, of course, we have a lot of questions. And it starts with referees' etiquette. We're going to reference, of course, the game the other night, but let's start with what a referee is supposed to do after he makes a penalty call. I spoke to an official from Hockey Quebec earlier today, and he pointed out that after a referee makes a call, he should essentially back himself away from a situation, head over to the penalty box, make the call, and then back away again, allowing his linesman to guide the players into the penalty box. Is that the right way to handle it, or is the situation always different?
Well, each situation is different, and it also is the correct approach, certainly at the amateur level. I find that when players are heated, it's best to stay away from them. In this situation, there was close proximity between Brandon Preston and referee Brad Watson at the penalty box. And sometimes even when a player is entering the penalty box, he'll say something that is within earshot of the referee. It becomes offensive, or is felt to be offensive, and there is a response that the referee provides back. And in this case, you could even see the referee say, point to his chest and say, are you talking to me? Was that for me? And that's sort of a second chance for the player, like just get in and be quiet. But it was repeated, obviously, and that's when the confrontation developed and emotions started to run out of control.
Hey, Carey, Stephen Hindle here. Quickly following up on that, given that we now have a two-referee system in the NHL, is there not some sort of mechanism in place where the other referee would then be able to swap positions, sort of step in for his counterpart, as it were, in terms of being able to cool it off, exactly as you're saying in how the protocol is to step away or at least avoid those heated players. If a player is having a problem with one referee, or maybe we could say is a little heated with one referee, does the other one then step in to try and resolve that situation? And is that one of the abilities, I guess you could say, of having a two-ref situation, a two-ref system in dealing with that situation?
Well, Stephen, if both referees were to raise their arm on a particular infraction, the procedure is that they're supposed to come together and make sure they, in fact, have the same penalty call. If it's an obvious penalty call, the one that both of them would have, I would typically, if the back referee and the infraction occurred in the end zone, if the back referee had his arm up and he was closer to the penalty box, even though it was more my call in my area of coverage, I would just give him a wave and say, okay, you go ahead and assess the penalty. You're closer. There is a procedure in place, and on this particular one, referee Brad Watson was the guy that was down low on the goal line, observed Brandon Press come into Braden Coburn and initiate contact and wrap him around the head and then try to draw Coburn into an infraction with a couple of head punches. So he was the guy that really needed to assess the penalty. It's the amateur process, and the person you spoke to is accurate. If I feel that there's any heat coming, any lip coming from a player, I am going to pull back. I'm going to let him go and get in the penalty box first with the escort of a linesman. And at that point, I'm going to assess the penalty. I don't want to confront or irritate or throw some gas on a fire. And today, in my column, Come On Ref, we had questions from fans that were confused by my column on the previous day. I said that Brad Watson would not have said the things that Brandon Prust accused him of. I know that for a fact, and as it turns out, he didn't say those things because Colin Campbell, in his statement, said that Brandon Prust's comments were baseless. That was a polite way of saying that they didn't happen the way they were reported in Prust's post-game dialogue. It didn't happen, but that doesn't recuse Brad Watson, who I have respect for, good colleague, good referee for 20 years. It doesn't recuse him of some wrongdoing in how he presented himself. And I wrote about that today. It wasn't a back-off position from my end, but it was simply to clarify. Sometimes when I write the column, I think I'm talking at a referee school. And I know there's a lot of referees that follow it, and I try to educate them for things that they should and shouldn't do. You don't point your finger at a player. That is inciting. It can be taken as an aggressive posture. Referees need to be part of the solution and not part of the problem, and you have to bring the temperature down sometimes. Your body language is the first form of communication that you're going to give not only to a player, but to everybody in attendance in the building and also to the people watching on television. So you have to be above the emotional draw that sometimes takes place in a confrontation, stay neutral emotionally, and try and use everything you can to bring the temperature down and not incite.
And speaking about the temperature down, Brendan Prest had some comments today issuing an apology. Here they are.
I'd like to apologize to Brad Watson and the rest of the officials in the NHL if I've caused any embarrassment or headache. That's definitely was uncalled for. We got in a heated exchange that should have stayed between us. I've always played by the code on and off the ice, and been a pretty honest player. But Sunday I crossed the line.
Okay, Kerry, you lay blame on both. Of course, you talk about Brad Watson's body language, and of course, Brandon Prust going out publicly and saying a few things about the words that were used by Watson at the penalty box. But say, for example, there was some merit to Brandon Prust's argument and what he was saying publicly. Is there an avenue that players can actually take with the league or through their team for them to file a grievance against an official that would possibly say something like that to them?
Well, there is. I certainly don't condone what Brandon Prust did. He was very contrite in his apology, and everyone has to accept that. It wasn't forced. Michelle Therrien said when they had a meeting this morning that Brandon Prust wanted to apologize. He needed to apologize because the things that he reported weren't accurate. They weren't stated by the referee. So it was a distraction that he presented for his team. If there is any cause that a player feels or a team feels that they want to protest the work of an official, It could be on the overall presentation in the game, number of penalties, feeling they got shortchanged. The general manager can file an official request that the game or the call or the work of the official be reviewed. When that takes place, it's done in writing. It's submitted to the vice president of officiating, Stephen Walkham. He must review the complaint. He must look at the game in question, the call, and the work of the official, and then follow up with a written report back to the team general manager within, I believe it's a couple of days.
As they say, sticks and stones and all that jazz, but really it comes down to being professional, and emotions in the playoffs can often be the toughest bull in the china shop to rein in. And Brandon Prust, being an emotional hockey player as he is, I have kind of a two-parted question for you here, Kerry. One, does a player like that get any leeway, any extra shoulder on the road for perhaps an emotional outburst, in the sense that coming back from all of this, will Prust now be a marked man, or is this something that will temper itself and cool off, and perhaps not in these playoffs, but at least moving towards next season, this can be perhaps water under the bridge for Brandon Prust? And further to that, and even further down the line, is this a situation where perhaps one day Brandon Prust and Brad Watson will be able to shake hands, have a beer, and talk about this in hindsight?
Well, I think they really should, and that was the last line of my column today. The first olive out of the jar was Brandon Prust, his contrite apology today publicly. That goes a long way, and it should be viewed by the officials as someone that has made a mistake and has sincerely apologized, and I believe that it was sincere. He is an emotional player. I like the way Brandon Prust plays. I always liked players that were team guys, stuck up for their teammates. You knew what you were going to get. He's an honest guy, and he said that in his comments. He's played and lived by the code, and he never really crossed a line. He just was hard-nosed. This was the first blip on the screen, as far as I know. I never had a problem with Brandon Prust as a player from a verbal perspective. So I think and hope that it's going to end here with this apology. The officials will be professional. I say that with the caveat that Brandon Prust has to earn, regain the respect of the officials, because when something like this is said, it can be stuck in the back of their mind. If a player is known as a diver, an embellisher, the referees will watch that player much more closely, and he won't get the benefit of the doubt if there's one to be given. I'm not suggesting that the officials will target Brandon Prust. That just isn't acceptable, and that would show up if it were the case. But I think that he's got to earn his stripes again as being an honest guy, because basically what he said wasn't really honest.
We remind you, you're listening to Breaking Habs Radio on the Hockey This Week Radio Network. Stephen Hindle, Costa Papoulias, and on the line with us, former NHL referee Kerry Fraser. Now, you mentioned embellishment, and that brings me to another question, this time about P.K. Subban. It's been documented that P.K. went out and called Colin Campbell to get a clarification of what he can do as a player to change the reputation that he has right now as an embellisher. You and I both know, and Stephen knows this as well, that players will try to sell calls, not necessarily overdoing it to try to embellish. And P.K. Subban is such a strong skater and strong guy on his skates that when he goes down, a lot of times it looks like he's doing it on purpose to try to draw the referee's eye and get a call. It's the right thing to do, as far as I'm concerned, for P.K. to reach out and try to get a proper explanation. But in doing that, is there any way that he can change the reputation that he's already developed, seeing as how he's been fined twice by the league already?
Well, there certainly is, and the first objective that PK had was to speak to Colin Campbell, because he's the one that levies the fines and writes the letters. So he had to find out what it is that he could do differently. From a referee's perspective, I think PK has to, again, establish or develop trust with the referees that when he does fall, he has some theatrics to his presentation. And I've written about it from the start of the season. I sent a warning out to both him and Brendan Gallagher that they were on the radar screen of the officials for diving and from hockey operations. So they need to really try and stay on their feet as best they can. I know Montreal fans go crazy when I say this sort of thing, but they do, in the times that penalized or fined, it was obvious to me from a referee's perspective that there was embellishment. You mentioned what a great skater PK Subban is. His balance is incredible. And when he does get touched and does try and draw the foul, it's to me very obvious in the theatrics of the way he goes down. He needs to establish with the referees and through communication, listen, I'm really trying. Let's get a relationship going here, do some relationship building. I'm going to try and stay on my feet as best I can. If I fall down, I want you to know I'm not trying to make you look bad. It's just a result of contact, I'm going to do my best to try and turn around your perception of the embellishment that I've been accused of.
Awesome insight. Thank you, Carey, for all of this. And I got to go a little full circle on this comment in rounding up Brandon Prust, PK Subban, Brendan Gallagher, and throwing in a little bit of your own experiences. Of course, you have a phenomenal book out there. Everybody should definitely check it out. It's called The Final Call. And along with your column on TSN, Come On Ref, you kind of highlight your own personal experience and your most profane verbal attack, as you point out, coming from Mark Crawford, at the time coach of the Quebec Nordiques. I have to ask you, I want to ask you about that situation in particular, and if you could elaborate a little bit. But also, I want to ask you about Michel Therrien's role in all of this. As the coach of the Montreal Canadiens, we've been talking about the fine lines of the officiating and the player's role and responsibility and the emotions that come between all of this and how it affects the outcomes in the games. Michel Therrien perhaps might have been best served to call a timeout in the second period of Game 2. Coach and I, Costa and I, were just talking about this in the first segment of the show here on Breaking Habs about how Michel Therrien perhaps let things get a little further away than he should have. Do you think that Therrien perhaps missed the boat on this one and has a little bit of responsibility in containing and controlling his players, and at the same time, has a coach, you know, does the coach factor into it as much as he used to in terms of how Mark Crawford clearly drew your ire back in 1995?
You had to bring that up, didn't you?
Well, those are, I'll tell you, it's a great lead-in. First of all, let's deal with Michel Therrien. I wouldn't have waited to the second period to address the lack of discipline. When a player in a playoff series down a game at home takes a talking penalty, it just needs to stop. It needs to be sealed up at that point, because a talking penalty is one that is a no-brainer. There are good penalties to take. If a player's in a scoring opportunity and you're trapped, you're caught behind him, and you have to reach out and get him off the puck, those are typically acknowledged as a good penalty. A talking penalty is a no-brainer. At that point, there's a loss of focus. The Montreal team, and I was at both games, in the early going of games, were forechecking incredibly hard. They were really on top of their game. And then there was a shift. At 13 and change is when Brandon Prust was upset with Coburn from a cross-check shove at the other end of the ice. And as play, Canadians went on the attack, he went directly to Coburn, gave him a little bit of a cross-check out front, and then wrapped him around the head, tried to draw him into a penalty because he knew he was going to get one. The talking aspect of it showed me a lack of composure and a lack of discipline, regardless of what Brad Watson did in that situation. So at that point, the coach really needed to say, boys, calm down, let's get back to focus. They killed the penalty. And then PK, had a cross-checking penalty called where they were scored upon shortly thereafter. At that point, things are starting to unravel. The Mark Crawford situation was wicked. It was so foul, so profane. I stood there, but I put myself at the bench, similarly to what Brad Watson did with his engagement at the penalty box with Prust. Once I went to that bench, I had just given a penalty to Peter Forsberg. He was a rookie for the Nordiques in that season. And Crawford wasn't putting his four guys out. They were going to lose the game. It was in Florida. And I went to the bench knowing and expecting that he was going to dump something on me. He was frustrated. His team lost the night before in Tampa. But yet I went to that bench to ask him politely, and I used the word please, to put four guys on the ice. Now, he unloaded on me. Wicked. I stood there. I had to take it. My muscles were twitching. I had dry mouth from all of my senses were on overdrive. But I had to push that emotion down, and I had to control it. I said, "Are you finished?" He said, "Yes, I'm done." I said, "That's the most disgusting dialogue I've ever heard from a coach in my whole career. But you and I, and not one of your players believes what you said, but we'll save that for another day." That meant you're not going to get thrown out of this game. We'll save that for another time. I need four guys on the ice, and I need them now, please. And after the game ended, shortly thereafter, I was still agitated. I was upset, no differently than Brandon Prust probably was at the end of the game the other night of game two. I went in the dressing room. I sat down. I took my skates off, and there was a knock on the door, and it was Mark Crawford, and he came to apologize. I invited him in the room. I said, "Have a beer with the linesman and I." We talked about it, and I explained to him that the discipline of a team typically comes from behind the bench. And I gave him an example of the New York Islanders that won four Stanley Cups and my experiences with Al Arbor as a very disciplined coach that transferred that to his players. If Al Arbor yelled at me or spoke, I listened because I knew I must have done something that was suspicious. So that's where the dialogue went. But before he left the dressing room, I accepted his apology. We shook hands, and I said, "I am going to issue you here and now, in front of these two fine linesmen as my witness, a career warning. That means that if you ever yell or swear at me off the bench again, you will immediately get a bench penalty. There will be no per-game warning next time you do it. It's happening here and now. Do you accept it?" He said, "I do." Boom. We're done. And the next time he yelled at me was a year later in a game in Anaheim, and it was towards the end of the season, same kind of situation. It was an obvious penalty I called, and from 85 feet away, I heard him yell, "Kerry, what the..." And all he got out was the F. That was it. The F. And boom, I wheeled around and gave him a bench penalty, and he dropped his head because he knew we had made a deal, and he violated it.
That's awesome. I can't help but
so the coach. The coach has a tremendous impact. Claude Lemieux was playing for the Avalanche at that point. They'd moved to Colorado, and Pepe came to me and he said, "Kerry, don't call the second penalty. Call the first one." I said, "You go tell Crow, Florida." Pepe looked at me with a crazy look in his face. He said, "Florida, what are you talking about?" He said, "We're in Anaheim." I said, "You just go say Florida. He knows all about it."
Kerry, love the story. Love all the insight today. We went a little long, but we so loved every second of it. Thank you so much for joining us on Breaking Habs, and we hope to do it again, hopefully, before this playoff is over.
Thanks, guys. Call me anytime. Love to talk.
That, of course, was Kerry Frazier, longtime NHL referee, giving us the lowdown on his history with Mark Crawford, and that was
doesn't
awesome.
Doesn't get better than that.
Oh, no. No, and I've been guilty of dropping a couple of F-bombs on the bench, too, but we won't go there. What we will do is go to break, and on the other side, we will preview the next two games between the Montreal Canadiens and the Tampa Bay Lightning in Tampa, Florida. You're listening to Breaking Habs Radio. We'll be back.
We'll be back with more Breaking Habs Radio.
Everybody knows that particular situation when a date starts off really well. And then she asks that terrible question. Do you have a condom? But did you ever notice that you never have a condom when you need it? There is a solution. SOS Condoms Application. SOS Condoms will save your date in every situation. Wherever the place, you just have to locate yourself, and our teams will take care of the rest. Here is SOS Condoms, the new application powered by Durex. SOS Condoms. It will save your date. Click here to download it on the App Store or order direct on www.sos-condoms.com. Now available in Dubai.
Okay, welcome. Is there anything I can get you before we start? Glass of water?
You may dispense with the pleasantries.
Okay, great.
At the end of the road, turn round.
Okay, I'm going to stop you. The line is at the end of the road, turn right.
That is what I said.
Terrific. So let's just try it again.
At the end of the road, turn round.
Let's just go forward. Okay, we're at page 5.
Page 5?
I'm sorry, page 7. We're at page 7.
I don't have a page 7. You have reached your destination.
Is there any way you could breathe a little quieter?
What do you mean quieter? This is how I breathe. Please take the third exit on the roundabout.
It's roundabout.
Correct. You should have seen his face when I told him I was his father. I told my son, who did not know that I was his father, that I was his father.
Yeah, and there's a twin sister involved.
Ah. Here it is.
Whoa. You know what? Let's move forward. That's fine.
Silence. Roundabout.
It's about being around.
Don't underestimate the power of the dark side.
Now, back to Breaking Heads Radio.
Broken bones, no broken hearts, but a little bit of faith lost in Montreal. Welcome back to Breaking Habs Radio. I'm Costa Papoulias along with Stephen Hindle. And if you missed it, we're going to put it up later on BreakingHabsRadio.net. A fantastic interview with former NHL referee Carey Fraser. We thank him so much for joining us. How do you continue the show after that?
I think the only way to do that is to surprise our listeners by letting them know that the Calgary Flames have scored a goal.
Absolutely, Steve. Go ahead. Give them the walk around the league.
Well, here we are. I believe we are night 21 of the NHL playoffs. Of course, for you pedestrians out there, that means it's Tuesday, May 5th. And right now, the Chicago Blackhawks and Minnesota Wild are doing battle. So, too, are the Anaheim Ducks and Calgary Flames as the two Western Conference series continue their trek through round two. Now, both series are in game three, respectively. The Blackhawks holding court a 2-0 series lead, and right now they have a 1-0 lead at the end of two periods of play. So the Wild are going to start scrambling, and if you thought the Montreal Canadiens were up against the ropes, well, at least they still haven't gotten into game three yet, because the Ducks, well, they were looking to run away with this series, but the Flames opened scoring under 3 minutes in to game number three, and it's 1-0 for Calgary. But how long that will last, well, we'll just keep you posted on that through the end of the show, but you might as well do yourself a favor and check it out as well. Sea of Red in
but
full
don't
effect.
Leave.
No, we've still got more,
and you know this is.
We're not
down,
on TV.
So.
You should definitely still be listening to us.
Yeah, yeah. Don't,
as
don't.
Well as you know, scouting
multitask,
around the rest
people,
of the
multitask,
NHL.
Multitask.
That's right. Come on.
All right, let's move on. Looking ahead to games 3 and 4 in Tampa Bay, Steve. It's the obvious question. How does Michel Therrien get the ship righted and get Montreal on the right side of the ledger?
Well, let's just segue a whole bunch from what Carey Fraser was telling us, and that is that Montreal's coach needs to step up in his own way. We were suggesting to Carey that maybe Therrien needed to call the timeout somewhere in the second period when things were getting out of control, and he pinpointed a scenario even earlier than that that he thought the coach should have been calling that timeout. And I think it speaks volumes to the abilities and inabilities that encompass Michel Therrien's coaching style and how it's going to affect the Canadiens. Getting over the hump in the playoffs does not seem to be something he, and that is Michel Therrien, has ever been able to spark any of his teams to do at the NHL level. So everybody remembers the situation in Pittsburgh where he left, and they promptly went on to win a Stanley Cup. The Canadiens have exited in the first round, gone to the conference finals, and here they are in the second round in need of two road wins. Let's just drill down and be very simple here, Costa. One road win, two road wins, series is even, and the Canadiens have home ice advantage once again in a best of three. That's all they have to be thinking about. Anything beyond that will ruin their focus.
Yeah, there you go. Here's the thing. We were talking about this, too, in regards to the difference between regular season and postseason. And one of the things that I find that Michel Therrien doesn't do enough is open up and show his emotion behind the bench. And here's my thought process behind that, okay? I know everybody says, oh, well, he
knows. Anger management,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he's had to temper it down. But there are certain points in time where a coach can use his own emotions, not only to temper the emotions of the players on his bench, but to get them going again. And I think Michel Therrien is at that point where he's got to start showing. I'm not saying lose his
mind. He's got to take a bullet for the team.
Exactly. I'm not saying lose his mind behind the bench. Far be it from that.
You know what? If he'd lost his mind instead of Brandon Prust losing his, the situation would have been far better contained, and the Montreal Canadiens would probably not have found themselves as emotionally lopsided, but probably even more corralled, I think would be a good term to use, if their coach was the one losing it for them, because that is his position. He's the mouthpiece. If four assistants on the Montreal Canadiens are not voicing their opinions, then that right there needs to leave the responsibility to the coach. Not another veteran leader like Brandon Prust, who has been doing everything he can to stir things up for the Montreal Canadiens. And, you know, if you want to make a Habs fan feel better, you just let them know that while the Calgary Flames got out to their early 1-0 lead, the Anaheim Ducks decided that they should not allow them to have a lead for more than 2 minutes. The Ducks have tied this game in the first period, 1-1, Anaheim and Calgary. Listen, the Canadiens are in tough against a Tampa Bay Lightning team that has got their number.
Yeah, but you see, I don't think the Tampa Bay Lightning are beatable.
I didn't say unbeatable, but
No, don't get me wrong here. I'm not trying to put words in your mouth.
It's the mentality of it, though, right?
But yeah, and this, that's what gets to me, is the fact that every team is human. And like the analogy goes in football, any team can win on any given Sunday. It just so happens that Tampa Bay has won every single Sunday so far this season where the Montreal Canadiens are concerned.
Is this football? What's going on?
It's the analogy.
I know.
And to get out of that rut, I think Montreal has to start using their own emotions to get over it. Emotion brings creativity. Because when you're playing with emotion as a player...
Fine line, coach.
Hear me out here. When you play with a little bit of emotion, especially like your heart. You know, we always talk about those untouchables that players, that you can't gauge for a player. And now, when it comes to a player who plays with emotion, the one thing that you can guarantee is that his adrenaline is going to start pumping. That will bring up his energy levels. It'll make him more aware on the ice, and it'll make him a lot more creative because he's going to start thinking the game at a greater speed because of the fact that he's all jacked up on all this adrenaline as the situation goes forward. The Montreal Canadiens need to play with a little bit more emotion. And I'm not saying the type where you start taking penalties and you start going at the corners and laying hits that you shouldn't lay. But Montreal has to start playing the game with their sticks and emotions as opposed to the way they've been doing it right now.
And I agree with you. The problem is we keep talking in generic terms, and I think that's the problem with the hockey world today. And this is no criticism of your description.
It better not be.
I think a good way to boil it down, to dial into what you're saying, is that there are channels of emotions. And what the Montreal Canadiens need to do is channel in to a stream of emotion that capitalizes on the negative emotional aspects that they've had to put themselves through to push them over that to positive aspects they can achieve from the experience. One of the things we didn't get to ask Carrie Fraser about is how the experience can be a learning one. And, and you know, we kind of did ask him about it, and that he highlighted the deal made with Mark Crawford, and that for as much as it worked, the emotions do get the better of you, but that by having control of the situation, i.e., the deal, or the warning issued by Carrie Fraser to Crawford in Florida that evening, a year later, all he needed to say was one word to send a message, to set the tone, to set things straight, to avoid having things go off the rails. Now, it's not always that easy and not always that simple. Great control mechanism issued to a very feisty coach by a very astute referee. And it could be some tactics that referees in the NHL right now could benefit from using, but there's always going to be these off-the-hook, unhinged moments.
It's the playoffs, of course there's going to be.
Getting it back means switching channels from one to another that directs this team to using all of those intangibles that you're just talking about to make sure that in Game 3, when it comes up, they don't take that penalty.
Right.
In Game 3, when they get pushed, they don't step over the line. And in Game 3, when they are feeling the pressure or in a hole or down by a man or whatever the negative situation is, they need to remind themselves that they've been there and that the only way out of it is going to be pulling themselves up out of the hole and not burying themselves deeper.
Okay, now you bring up channeling their emotions and stuff like that. I want to talk about channeling the system and their creativity. Does Michel Therrien tell his players, you know, try to play as much as you can with this in the system, but I want to see what you can bring to the table? Because right now the system has not been working. The system is no good. The Canadians cannot get offense. They're playing a little bit too much defense. And
hey,
not
I'm with
to...
you. When they are more threatening shorthanded offensively than they are on the power play, there's no argument to be made in justifying one or the other.
Right.
It's god-awful. There's a big problem right there. And how you solve that issue will be the biggest question mark of them all, and we're all left scratching our heads. So if you really want to talk about what can be done or how they need to change things or what Therrien's influence is on special teams, I think it's so jumbled right now that whatever messages they had in the first place, whatever the initial plan was...
Mass confusion.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest problem with the Montreal Canadiens right now is confusion, because you don't have enough of that offense coming, and they're playing a defensive game because they know the firepower that the Tampa Bay Lightning have, and they're getting lost, and the message is getting lost. And I think, and that's where my point comes up, where I think it's time to let the players dictate how they're going to play the game. There's only so much a coach can do, and Michel Therrien has pretty much exhausted all his avenues. He's used all kinds of different line combinations. He's tried guys on the first line, third line, second line. He's tried different looks on the power play. I think it's time to open it up and tell the players, listen, be creative out there, do what you do best, and show me how you can bring that to our game.
And can we not just add that with time running out and desperation setting in, that the need to rediscover that killer instinct has to be sparked from something and somewhere?
Yeah.
And if the coach remains determined to be as conservative and consistent in harping on a system that, as you've put it eloquently, may not allow for creativity, well, maybe he himself will have to issue his own gag and let the offense start running a little freer, because if it doesn't start running, well, they'll start putting. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, that definitely is the bottom line. It's already that time. Can you believe it?
Bedtime.
Fastest hour in with your bedtime. Yeah, there's two hockey games going on. Bedtime, my foot. It's time to go downstairs, crack open that beer that Kerry's talking about, and have a good time watching these playoff games. Because, you know, up and down the NHL, the hockey's been fantastic so far. Always entertaining, no matter what the result has been. And I think moving forward is just going to continue to get better.
And moving forward, you and I can both agree one way or another, whether the Canadians win or lose, you will find us here next week.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where we will all win with another episode of Breaking Habs.
Absolutely. Whether the Canadians move through or whether they don't, that'll dictate what the show is about. But we should be back. Of course, the schedule, I think we're okay on Wednesday night.
Well, we leave that to the hockey gods.
Right.
And the Montreal Canadiens. They dictate our schedule. And if they're not playing on a Wednesday night, that's where you'll find us. Otherwise, we squeeze ourselves around their busy lives.
Exactly, and our busy lives as well. Steve, thanks so much again to Carey Fraser. I know you're listening. So much for joining us tonight. It was an absolute pleasure. We'll see you all next week. Enjoy the rest of the week, guys, and especially enjoy games 3 and 4. We're out.